Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey guys, we're back. This seems to be episode 99. It's creeping up on us. I can't believe we did that many episodes already. With me today, I have John Wibben. He is an expert in content marketing. Wrote a book on the future of content. And seems like a very interesting guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I seen that video with you dancing around. With
Yeah.
How did you come up with that? I mean, it was a whole song, man. Like, you did a whole song, I think.
Yeah, it was actually 2 minutes of a song, but that was my take on a TED Talk. I think a lot of TED Talks can be a little boring and informational, which is great, but in this age of shortened attention spans, we need to educate and entertain. So that was what I did.
Yeah, we'll link out to that too in the show notes, because, you know, it was one of these videos where I just kept watching. Usually I skip right through it. Like, you know, I've seen some marketers trying to rap, and I'm like, no, I can't. You know, but this was actually interesting. You had a whole backup dancer crew behind you too. That's what made it really interesting. I was like, huh, like, he actually put a lot of effort into it. Did you pay him, or was that like people from your company?
No, I come from a dancing family. My dad and mom met on the dance floor in 1965, and my dad's a ballroom dancer, and so all of us can dance. And so I figured, well, if I'm good at that, why don't I just go ahead and do it? And then I found some professional dancers to dance behind me, and we did a couple of rehearsals, and then you saw what you saw there.
Okay, that makes sense, because they looked professional. That's why I was wondering, like, this actually looks decent. You know, because most marketers, yeah, when they come out with something, it's like, oh god, like smoke machines or something is just corny. It's usually super corny, and this wasn't. That's why it did get my attention.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, and I've seen that book. You talk a lot about content marketing. You know, I mean, all your books, pretty much, they're all about content. You have a sauce, right? And that's on content too. Like, you're very gung-ho about content marketing. Why is that?
Well, you know, we've been trying to connect with our audience by using advertising for decades. And, you know, a lot of us are tired of advertising. A lot of us don't connect with advertising. Advertising pushes a message on us and expects us to stop what we're doing and pay attention. And content marketing is really the inverse of that, which is taking content, educational content, informational content, to inspire, to teach, to train, in hopes of building a connection, a relationship with your prospect, in hopes that over time, because you've educated them and given them all this great content for free, by the way, that when it comes time to buy, that they'll think of you. So it's a little different way to build a connection with your audience, and it's a way that's proven to have a better ROI at a lower cost than traditional advertising. So the question is, why not do it? It doesn't work for everybody. It doesn't work for every company, but it's really, the way I see it, really the de facto way to market today.
Yeah, I have a couple different takes on content. Maybe I've just been around the block too many times, right? But the first one is you still need to advertise even that content,
for
right?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. Yeah.
So that's one part where you're still kind of, you know, grabbing people. Two is, you know, a lot of people just like reading things and never take action.
That's
so
true.
You know, we're sort of distracting them with a lot of, you know, even if it's helpful, even if it's super helpful. And then we distract ourselves, you know, reading a lot of content too. And the one thing I've noticed lately is I'm getting to sort of be like anti-content on my own end, right? And, you know, I've been reading the biography of Leonardo da Vinci, right? And he came in at a really interesting time too, you know, just like we had the internet come up. Like, he had printing presses come up, you know? So when he was in around his 30s, it was the first time where you could actually not have to learn Latin and could read some books and own some books in your own language. So in his whole career, it said he owned about 40 books. Now think about that. Only 40 books in his whole life or so, right? And he created so much amazing stuff. You know, we look and read so much, and I think it's actually destroying our productivity and creativity, you know, because we just read too much. Like, I'm starting to go on this anti-content diet, you know, a lot.
Interesting.
But at the same time, like you said, you know, the more you give away free, and this works with my business too, well, a couple of them. If we tell people exactly what we do, like exactly, just give them the whole process, they usually buy from us because they just don't feel like doing it. Oh, it's too much work. So I see both parts of it, but I'm like, there are different angles for me, right? What are your thoughts on some of that?
No, I think it's really interesting, and I welcome that viewpoint. I think, you know, the Progressive company is doing a lot of different things. They're doing traditional advertising. Yes, they're doing content marketing. But they're also doing things like exploring new technologies to connect with their audience, like virtual reality, using AI-powered technology and platforms to build relationship, doing old-fashioned trade shows still. I mean, I think the smart company, the Progressive company, is looking at many different ways to get close to the customer. It's all about getting close to the customer and close to the prospect to build trust and to show that your products and services have value and can be important for them in some way, shape, or form. So, it's a combination of things, I think. And I agree with you. I mean, we all have – there's a lot of content out there, right? And we're kind of saturated in it, which means that it's got to be really good, and the good stuff always rises to the top. But there's a lot of noise out there, right? And so in the recent past, it was a lot of spam type email, and a lot of that was called noise. Now, to your point, a lot of content can be noise as well. So I think you have to be really intelligent about it, and find a way into the hearts and minds and souls of each of your individual customers in a unique way for each of those people. And that takes time. But when we look at AI and we look at different technologies that are coming out, it helps us get closer to that personalized experience, because that's really what it's about. It's about, you know, personalizing the interaction and using technology to enable that.
Yeah, I could kind of see, you know, those new technologies being helpful. I just don't see how they can be helpful for a small company now. You know, when you think of something big, like I think Audi just came out with a new car, and mm-hmm. and they're using, I think, virtual reality or something, right? Something new, some new kind of mirrors where they're inside and you can play with them with your like hologram or something, which, you know, that's something which will grab people's attention. I'm not sure if it's going to get them closer to a customer, but it's definitely grabbing their attention. You know, Facebook has that AI, that disables people's ad accounts all the time. I'm not sure how helpful that is.
Right.
You know, and then you got to wait for like a week to get someone on the Messenger to maybe re-enable it or get someone on the phone, which is not easy. So some of these companies are using this technology, but I think it's more gimmicky, or they're kind of in a way pushing away customers. You know, I'm not seeing any ways where this is really used right now to get closer to a customer.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think the message of content marketing is really the audience are those companies that have never done it, never tried it. And the reason we're still, you know, out there preaching the gospel of content marketing is because there's thousands, if not millions, of companies that still have not embraced it, maybe don't even know about it. So that's really who we're talking about, is the thousands of companies that still are doing traditional advertising and spending a lot of money on that. So I think we need to, you know, back up a second and realize that, you know, there's different segments of marketers. And the reason we're still talking about content marketing is because it hasn't reached a lot of still there's companies out there that have not adopted it, don't believe in it, have never tried it, maybe don't have a blog, have never done any video. And so the invitation is open to those companies to give it a spin and to at least try it. back to your point, I mean, the companies that are trying to be progressive and have used content marketing for a while, the onus is on them to try and, you know, keep it fresh and change what they're doing. And I think the real power is in combining traditional with digital. I don't think there's enough of that going on. So a lot of the companies that are doing digital only, they kind of forget to do the trade shows. They kind of forget to pick up the phone and talk to their customers. I think there's some of that going on too, especially with maybe companies that have come around in the last 5 to 10 years, where maybe they're led by someone in their 20s or 30s who, you know, they don't know what traditional advertising was like 20 or 30 years ago. And I don't want to put anyone down, right? But I'm just saying that there's still some tactics that from the 80s and 90s that are still valuable. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, we've done many trade shows, my company, over the years, and they're still super powerful. They can be expensive, but they can be very impactful as well. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but I think we're kind of just, you know, theorizing and you know, kind of brainstorming here to a certain extent.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I see a lot of new marketers scared to pick up the phone. I don't know why this is, but they just want to stay away from everything. I'm like, dude, it's like the easiest way to get customers and to write the least content you have to. Because that's sort of my thing. Like, I want to create the least, most impactful content and get customers on the phone. That's the whole point of me creating content. Like, I don't want to create content to create content, you know, which a lot of people are like, yeah, you got to create like 200, 300 pieces of content and Google. I was like, you know what? I get that. I got an SEO company. I know how this works. It's the long game.
Yep.
Most of those companies will never be shown on the first page of Google, because you got to remember, there's only 10 spots, right? So if you have 50 different marketers fighting over in the same niche, it's really like a winner take all. Only the first two on the top, they're going to take all the traffic, pretty much. Maybe the third one will get a little bit, but it's a losing game, unless you're number one.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, for sure. But the other piece of it too that kind of gets missed sometimes in the conversation is taking care of your existing customers and making them repeat loyal customers. There's a lot of companies that don't do that very well. So I think there's two different groups here. There's using content marketing to get new prospects and new customers, and then there's content marketing for your existing customers, right? I think as companies, big and small, and everything in between, we all need to do a better job at building greater loyalty with our existing customers and focusing on the top, you know, 10 to 20% of our customers who keep coming back for more, and realizing that these are VIP customers and they need to be treated differently than everybody else in our customer database. So there's that piece of it too. And when you look at companies like Apple, you know, or even Southwest Airlines or Starbucks or Nordstrom, some of the companies that have had, you know, very high loyalty rates, I think we all need to study those companies and find out why. It's not always the product or service. It's there's something more. It's the culture of the company. It's them really being transparent and open and bringing their customers in to the company for, you know, events and showing that they really value them, not just as customers, but as people, as human beings. And I talk about that in my book, Future Marketing, where getting close to the customer in the future is going to be about, you know, building experiences for your customers and showing that you really are transparent and care about them more than just them, you know, paying you money for stuff that you're selling. So that's I think, a big piece of it too that kind of gets lost in the content marketing conversation.
The loyalty and taking care of your customers.
And studying those companies that have really high customer loyalty and taking some of those lessons and adopting them in your company and then using content differently for those customers than other groups.
Yeah, so the one thing I've learned and I've implemented, and I usually tell people this too, so all my companies, the way I try to build them is to make sure that once we sell someone, we get recurring revenue, right? This is something I learned from insurance companies and some others I used to work for when I was younger, and I was like, this is brilliant. You know, you get the customer once, and I mean, I'm not as good as the insurance companies. They usually get them paying for life, you know, because they sell life insurance, other things, which is amazing. I mean, if you really think about it.
Right.
But that's the first thing, right? The second thing I've tried is when we tackle some weird problem that pops up with one customer and we learn something from it, I will write a little email with what we did and just send that to all the other customers.
Right. Yeah.
So sometimes they'll be like, oh shit, like, you know, we didn't even know this. This is something we've been thinking about or something that happened, but we just didn't ask you. And then, you know, maybe I'll put it as a blog post, but I usually keep it internal, right? Just because it's, you know, it's some usually high level stuff and it's not big enough to make into a blog post. It's just a little email, you know, but it's like, it's a golden nugget every couple of weeks, right? Because exactly what the customers want. The airlines, yeah. I mean, the biggest loyalty thing, I think, is the miles, you know? Because if you, you know, give someone an opportunity to get a free business class flight to Europe or something, I mean, you know, that person is going to be super happy for a long time, unless you really screw that up with bad food. But, you know, it's...
And I agree with that. Let's talk about the airline industry for a second, because I got to be honest with you, one of my favorite companies is JetBlue. I fly JetBlue almost exclusively. And the reason for that is really threefold. Number one, they kind of took over Southwest as the price leader in terms of the low cost for the value that you get. I don't know what happened to Southwest Airlines in the last 10 years, but their prices are always like kind of middle of the road or on the high side. So number one is the price of flights. And I can get a flight on JetBlue within a week from now for probably the most affordable fee or cost. So that's number one. Number two, I love the DirecTV differentiation that they did, where you can watch DirecTV on, you know, every seat, right? And there's no cost to that. And then number three, the service of their flight attendants is noticeably different from other airlines. And I'm not sure if that's training or what it is, but for those three reasons, JetBlue has my loyalty. And it's in an industry where there's a lot of commoditization and a lot of things kind of the same from airline to airline. JetBlue has done some really interesting things to stand out. And, I just want to talk about that and bring that up because that's a traditional industry, a traditional type company that's done some really good marketing. And not only it's not just the marketing, it's the customer service, it's the blend, it's the experience, the total customer experience. I think we can learn from some of the best companies out there. I've actually taken some things from JetBlue in terms of customer service and applied it to my own company. So,
yeah, I'm glad you mentioned JetBlue. It was one of my favorite airlines when I still lived in New York. I always flew out of them as much as I could. And it was for a couple different reasons. One of them, they built that awesome lounge, which looks cool as hell, right? So I always like to go to the airport. Nice. And the customer service, the thing I found out is they actually, one, they give them great benefits. Two, they allow them to work from home. I'm not sure if they still do that, but they used to. So a lot of these people were able to just work comfortably from home. There's no commute. A lot of the benefits going with that. They were one of the first companies allowing that, which you could tell, like the people were happy, right? They're hanging out, you know, they're just like, yeah, let me help you. Which, you know, the other airlines, not really. You know, everything's like numbers, you know. Like, you can feel the guy sitting in the cubicle.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And I don't mean to get off on a riff or anything, but you brought the airline, so I thought I'd tell you about my JetBlue loyalty.
It's fine. I mean, we all have it. Like, right now, I have a lot of different ways to get back to the States because I'm in Thailand, right? But my favorite one is Korean Airlines.
And, oh, really? Okay.
And their experience is amazing in business class. And I flew a lot of the business class, and I feel like American Airlines is not cutting it. Their connections are horrible. Delta, no. United, just horrible experience on there usually. You know, the people just like, they feel like they don't want to be there. When you go on Korean Airlines, you feel like a superstar.
Yeah, and you know, it's not that hard to hire people that actually want to do good and you know, represent your brand the right way. There's other companies that do that really well too. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with In-N-Out Burger here in Southern California and Nevada.
I'm always hearing. They're like, you have to come to this place. I haven't been because I'm usually in and out myself from just California, but everyone tells me you got to stop at this place. I don't get it. Like, what's so special?
Because the people that work there, whether they're faking it or whether it's real, it seems like they care about you. And And there's something very powerful about that. They treat you like a human being, and they also seem like they enjoy their job, and they're getting paid $10 or $12 an hour, and you know they're younger, and that's you know probably good money for what they do. But I think it comes down to that, and I think I know we're talking a lot about customer service here, but marketing and customer service go hand in hand. So
the conversation takes us where it does. You know, content marketing is one thing, but you know. But it's not, I feel like, the most important thing. You know, it is important in a way, you know, because we all do it a little bit, but it's not, you know, it's not the end all. In your book, what else would you say is something that when you tell people, like, really open their eyes, like, from the new book, like, something maybe they didn't get before?
I think one of the big ones is this transition from what I call, you know, brand messages and branding to more of these multi-sensory experiences. In the future, you know, people won't want to buy just a product or service from you. They're going to want to buy an experience. And there's just a lot of power in the experience. If you look at all these companies that do that, whether it's, you know, Disneyland or Disney World, or it's Bass Pro Shops, or it's REI, which is a outdoor sporting goods retailer. There's certain companies out there that have been doing these experiences for a long time. And the thing about experiences is we look forward to them, we remember them, we typically do experiences with our loved ones, or our family and friends, or our coworkers. So I think there's a lot of power in transitioning. If you're just a company that sells a product today, or just a company that sells a service, find a way to bring an experience to it. And I think you're going to have greater, number one, more customers, number two, more customer loyalty, and also you have a more interesting, you know, thing that you're offering, something that has legs, something that you can continue to do over time. So that's one of them is this whole transitioning to kind of an experience offering.
Yeah, I found two examples of that recently, which really opened up my eyes to the possibilities. One of them was, you know, we mostly deal with online course marketing right now. That's the company I focus on the most. And I've seen someone, when a person joins their course, they have a great onboarding, and they also send something really cool to the person at home, right? So they're like welcomed, you know, actually physically too. Like they get something to hold in their hands, like they're a new member, you know, with their name on it and everything. It's really cool. And people actually take pictures with it, and it's, you know, it's easy for them to promote this and use it in advertising. The other one, I was in Warsaw, and there's a very popular underground hip-hop group out there. And what they did is they came out with a CD, like a mixtape, and about 3 months later, they came out with an app on the I think the iPhone store and the Google apps. And okay. If you pointed the app, the screen, the camera, at the CD cover would start moving. You could see it on the phone, right, on the screen, and a bonus track would start playing.
Wow.
Which was insane. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen when it comes to music. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And people went nuts, obviously.
That's an experience. And that's a great example of what I'm talking about. So there's a lot of power in that. And I think we all need to take a step back and see, you know, how can we reinvent our products and our service offerings and do it in a unique and compelling way that really capitalizes on that connection thing. I mean, that's what they were doing with you, is they were connecting with you in a very unique and personal way and creating, and by doing that, they were creating some kind of experience. So I think sometimes we overthink it, like, oh, we got to spend a bunch of money and we got to do this big employee event. And no, I mean, that's maybe a traditional type of experience, but what you just explained is a very cutting edge digital experience that probably didn't cost them a whole lot. I mean, there was definitely some expense to it, but they, I'm sure they got, you know, paid back in terms of loyalty and just the wow factor of that. They probably got some good press out of that and buzz and everything else.
Yeah, they did. Let's talk a little bit about content launch.
Sure.
When did you launch this, first of all?
Yeah, so Content Launch is a content marketing platform that we built about 4 years ago. And we were in beta last year with it. We did a soft launch 2 months ago to a number of agencies, marketing agencies here in the U.S., And we're going to do a full launch kind of, I guess, U.S. and Canada in about a month. So we're kind of doing it in stages. But yeah, it's been out for a while, and we've gotten a lot of good reviews. We actually had an alpha product about 3 years ago, and it really wasn't quite ready for prime time. We had some issues with it, and so we took it down, redid the whole front end, and kind of reinvented how it looked and how people used it. And so now what we have is really taking all the lessons from our beta users over the last 18 months, and what we have is a much better product, and we're pretty happy with the response we've gotten.
That's a long time coming, about 4 years.
Yeah.
How much would you say you invested into this?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If you want to build a platform that people actually use and can go the distance, it's going to take you twice as long, and it's going to cost you twice as much.
Right.
I'm just telling you that from the trenches, from my experience. And we wanted to build this in a year and a half, and it took 3 years. We wanted to spend $400,000. It took $800,000.
Yeah.
And that's what it took to build a quality product that people loved. I didn't really know that going in, but we learned along the way, and that's just the way it goes when you're doing SaaS, and you're competing with a lot of other platforms. I mean, we live in a world of multiple platforms. So if it's going to be good and it's going to really deliver something that's unique and compelling, you gotta work at it and find a way to connect, and that's what it took for us.
I mean, that's the reality. What was your main traffic driver initially to get people onto the beta?
I started a marketing agency in 2003, a content marketing agency, really a content writing agency, mm-hmm. In 2003. And for 10 years, we wrote content for over 700 companies. Mm. Of those 700, there were about 200 agencies. So we took all of those customers and we basically offered the platform to a lot of them and said, hey, here, we built this for you. So we basically just used our own database, and we haven't done any advertising yet per se. But so we kind of just because we had the legacy business, the agency, we had kind of a built-in audience. So that's how we connected with those folks.
What's the transition been like from the beta to actual maybe paying customers or just moving into like an actual launch? Because I know that's really tough on a lot of SaaS companies.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm sure folks out there, and you've probably heard the term growth hacking. And so what we decided, what we realized we needed to do is we needed to do some really cool, growth hack, if you will, to build leads and to build an engine of leads. And so what we did is we built an algorithm for content scoring, a very simple, easy to understand content scoring algorithm. What I found over the years is that, you can get lost in the numbers, lost in the data real quick. And, Google Analytics is a great free tool, but you got to really pour through everything. And I like simplicity. And so we decided to build an algorithm to score your content there was a lot under the hood, but it was very simple and easy to use and gave you one score on your content. And so we built this landing page that basically offers to score your content, your existing content on your website. All you gotta do is put in your email address, your URL, and then we'll do the magic behind the scenes and then spit back a score on a scale from 0 to 10. And that was our growth hack. Hmm. We've been testing it out. We haven't actually launched that yet, but in our tests, the tests have been really good and very favorable response. So I don't know if you're familiar with HubSpot, but HubSpot did something similar. They did a website grader tool.
Yeah.
And they scored like 2 million URLs in a period of 5 years. So we didn't reinvent the wheel. We kind of took what HubSpot did, but then made it very much about content. So we took a deep dive on the content piece of it, built our own algorithm, and then did the content scoring landing page. So that's our plan for generating a lot of leads and for really getting the word out about our company.
Seems like that took a lot of time too.
It did. It took. It was supposed to take 3 months. It took 9. And the reason for that is it had to be good, right? I mean, we didn't want to just be another content scoring tool because there's others out there. That's what it took. And there were a lot of missteps along the way. But it took us 9 months to build that.
So what's the main thing that this software helps with?
So we built a content marketing platform for small agencies and smaller companies. Companies that have been locked out of the larger content marketing platforms. There's a lot of platforms out there that help with the content marketing, but they were mainly built for the large enterprise. They're $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 and higher per month to use them. And there's like half the companies out there, they simply couldn't afford that. The other piece of it is some of them were kind of complicated to use and set up, and a lot of them charge for training. So we you know, changed that all around and said, well, let's build a really simple UI with a lot under the hood, but very simple to use, really, easy UI, and we don't charge for training. For most companies, that is. And so we took those ideas to build a better mousetrap, or to connect with an audience that was underserved. So it really helps you with content planning, creation, and distribution, and then the scoring piece on top of that. But, you know, like I told you, we had this agency, content writing agency, for many years. So we had content writers. So we basically took all of our content writers and put them in the platform. So now you can order content through us through the tool, and it's really easy to use. And that's all baked in there too. So if you don't want to write the content, you can order content from us. And that's actually the number one feature in the tool right now, is the content ordering piece.
So you actually still have that agency writing the content?
Well, it's all automated now. It's all automatic. So we don't touch it at all. The user interacts with the writer, and the writer, writes the draft, and then it comes up into your account. You can connect with the writer, ask for edits back and forth. So it's all automated, and it's all in the platform.
Right, John. Where can people find you?
Yeah, contentlaunch.com. Just like you're launching a rocket, contentlaunch.com. They can sign up for a free account and take it for a spin.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, Tom, I appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.